Welcome to Ballistic Radio, the fastest growing gun talk show in the country. Join us. We're going to explore the topics of firearms, self-defense, and your rights as a law-abiding citizen. Now, here's your host, John Johnston.
Welcome to Ballistic Radio. I'm your host, John Johnston. Remember, you can always listen to past shows at ballisticradio.com and get the latest behind-the-scenes info, arguments, silliness, the general air of stupidity at facebook.com/ballisticradio. So, co-hosting with me, Mr. Matt the Minion. Hello. How are you?
Hello, John. How are you?
I'm doing well. So we're doing an extra special episode with John Chapman today, and I've realized that we've had a lot of Johns on the show lately.
Why is it extra special?
I don't know, because it's John Chapman.
Oh, okay then.
It's John.
He's just extra special.
Yes, he is extra special. So his beard's awesomer than mine too. I hope one day when I grow up I can be just like him. Just a quick reminder before we get started: this segment brought to you by Wilson Combat. Wilson Combat, makers of the finest custom 1911s, ARs, and scatter guns since 1977. A legacy of quality, innovation, and service. Learn more about their firearms and accessories at www.wilsoncombat.com. So, joining us on, I could talk about, you know, the NRA show and all that. The one thing that I saw that just was amazing to me, HPR ammo, I want to say, they've got a new line of Black Ops ammo, and it was literally the dumbest thing that I've ever seen, where they're actually talking about things that will get ammo deselected inside of, like, purchasing, you know, trials for, like, departments and things like that, and they're, like, saying it as a positive, you know, like, core jacket separation. I'm like, no, that's a bad thing. So, anyway, well, yeah, I probably shouldn't go there. Let's talk to John Chapman.
Yeah.
John, are you there?
I am, John. How are you?
I'm good. So I made the doctor joke when I had John Hearn on. I'm going to do it again here, and no one's going to laugh a second time. Well, thank you for being gracious about it. So anyway, man, how you been?
I'm good. Just recovering from the wonderful NRA show.
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny. Whenever I go to one of these things, I end up a little sick or a lot of sick, depending. I got way sicker after shot. This hadn't been as bad, but... you know, maybe.
Yeah, we
go ahead.
There's no Vegas hangover to go with the show hangover this time.
Yeah, there's that. So, just real quick for people that have been living under a rock or not listening to the last show you were on, or just are not as knowledgeable as they should be, can you go over your background real quick? Then we'll get started.
Sure. I'm a former police lieutenant. Was a SWAT guy for most of my career and been teaching professionally since 1994.
All right.
I currently am the tactical applications manager for Beretta Defense, and I'm a weapons and tactics instructor for EAG Tactical and LMS Defense.
Cool. So you kind of know what you're talking about most of the time.
Most
of the time. So what are we going to talk about today? I know we had sort of gone over it, but, you know, there seems to be a lot of people dealing the whole everyday carry thing, the EDC, which is like the big cool kid thing to do these days inside of the tactical community. And
it is.
It doesn't seem like there's much thought put into it, though.
No, in some ways there's too much thought put into it, and in other ways there's not enough. What I mean by that is folks focus on the gear that they want to carry versus what they... the reason they're carrying that gear in the first place and selecting equipment properly from there.
Okay. So what are some examples of that? I mean, just like people want to carry something cool and they've not given any thought to why they're actually carrying it, or?
Yeah, it's not just the gun. It's all the other equipment that they're carrying, too, as part of the EDC bad. So... as with all things gunfighting, the first step is to determine what you want to do with this equipment and why you're carrying it in the first place.
Right.
And I see a lot of folks carrying either ultra small pistols or ultra big pistols.
Mm-hmm.
I think starting with the gun and working backwards from there is a smart way to go, and that's what most people do. But I see some pretty common mistakes dealing with students, especially now that kind of enhanced CCW type classes, classes that are intended to teach you tactics that have to do with concealed carry are getting popular. I'm seeing a lot more of these folks' equipment.
So can you expand on that just a little bit as far as like the some of the mistakes people are making, at least with, we'll start with handgun selection since that's always a popular topic.
Sure. I'm seeing people either A, shooting guns that are, or carrying guns that are too small to shoot effectively.
Right.
They go into the gun store and they, after reading on the internet that, you know, the Smith & Wesson Shield is the best carry gun ever, and they go buy one and fire 20 rounds through it and then start carrying it.
Mm-hmm.
They haven't really pushed themselves through a series of standards or taken a class with it to determine whether or not they can shoot it enough, comfortably enough to get good with it. Handguns are not carbines. If right. if you practice with one M4 carbine and then you pick up a different one and shoot it, the differences aren't that much. Handguns are so hard to shoot to begin with, and they're so individual that unless you have spent hundreds of thousands of rounds perfecting your skills, some of your skills are going to be dependent on the handgun that you're actually carrying. They're not universal.
Right.
If that makes sense.
No, definitely. I was going to say, now you said something, and I kind of want to highlight this a little bit. You said because handguns are so hard to shoot. Now, I know a lot of people are going to go, well, I do fine with my handgun. Do you think that there's a lack of understanding of what being a good shot is, or maybe even what the accuracy requirements are to effectively stop someone?
Yeah, there's a lot of misconceptions about pistol. You have the least physiomotor control over a pistol of all the weapon systems. You only have 2 points of contact with it,
mm-hmm.
and you're putting it out as far as you can reach from your face and attempting to put an underpowered bullet into a very specific spot on the body.
Mm-hmm.
Pat Rogers likes to say that the only person you can reliably kill with a handgun is yourself. And my personal experience tends to bear that out. Accuracy and speed are both vital in ending a fight with a pistol.
Yeah.
And the fact that you can go to the 10-meter line at your indoor range and put all the rounds into a 4-inch circle, frankly, just isn't good enough. You need to be able to do that at speed at 15 or 25 yards, because under the stress of somebody actually shooting back at you or threatening your family, your groups are going to double or triple in size. So the smaller those groups are at speed in practice, the more likely you are to actually hit a vital area that's going to accomplish your goal, which is to get them to stop doing whatever it is that caused you to start shooting them, is going to be.
Do you think that's just so many people focus on, you know, inducing a psychological stop that they don't stop to think that maybe the attacker they're facing isn't going to stop just because you shot him?
Right. A determined attacker needs to be shut off physically.
Right.
And that's what we train for. You don't train to fight the idiot or the unmotivated person.
Right.
You train to fight someone who is psychologically and physically motivated and fit, and who is not going to stop until you make them stop physically.
Do you think that we got about 30 seconds left, then we have to go to break, so we'll hop back into
sure.
this. But do you just think people don't want to think about how bad their day can get if they actually need the gun?
They do, and a lot of people carry a gun for psychological comfort.
Mm-hmm.
They don't think through the actual skills and techniques that are going to be necessary if it's actually needed.
Okay. Well, we'll talk about that in a little bit. Right now we're talking with John Chapman about equipment selection, amongst other things. Right now you're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio. This segment brought to you by the Paulipalooza 3 Memorial Training Conference. Join some of the top trainers in the country August 15th and 16th at the Raven Concealment Systems facility in North Northern Ohio, where they will be teaching some of the most vital self-defense skills that every armed citizen should know. Lesson blocks will cover a myriad of topics suitable for shooters and students of all skill levels. For more information, visit paulepalooza.com. That is Paul, the letter E, Palooza, P-A-L-O-O-Z-A.com. And remember, save the date, August 15th and 16th. So, we are talking with John Chapman about equipment selection and also some of the misconceptions that people have once they start carrying a gun. John, are you still there?
I am.
So we were discussing before the break how people have kind of a sunny disposition about what the worst day of their life is going to look like. And you were discussing sort of the accuracy requirements that we really should be striving for just to be a well-rounded shooter, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you mentioned before the break people carrying guns that are too large.
Yes.
What do you mean by that exactly? I'm curious to get your take on that.
My take on that is carrying a gun with a Aimpoint T1 on it and an X300 U-boat in an outside-the-waistband holster, unless you are extremely skinny or extremely tubby, you're going to have a hard time concealing that gun.
Mm-hmm.
I get and I agree that we want a gun that is full-sized enough for us to shoot it to maximum performance. However, concealed means concealed.
Right.
And you give up some of your advantage in that world if anybody can look at you and tell very easily that you're carrying a gun.
So
finding that balance is important.
Yeah. So when you say a gun that's too large, you're talking mainly about whether or not someone can effectively conceal it.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Wanted to be
clear. I mean, I shoot a Glock 34 a lot, and I can't conceal it.
Well, you know, this is where I like plug a holster that I've been working on and say, well, I don't want to do that. But I mean, I carry an X300 equipped something or other in an appendix holster and do pretty okay. I've done 34s. Been rocking a 17 lately just because I like the slide velocity a little bit better on that. But then we're getting into minutia that no one else cares about other than
sure.
me and other gun nerds. So,
What
do you think? What do you think causes that with people? Is it more of when the gun becomes a fashion accessory, or?
That's part of it. And part of it is a honest desire to have the most capable system with them all the time that they can.
Right.
And I get that. I would just encourage them to look at their concealability realistically.
Okay. So what are some other things? I mean, we've covered... We're kind of going through the Goldilocks, this porridge is too hot, this porridge is too cold.
But, right.
you know, what's a good compromise then, do you think?
A good compromise is a capable enough gun that you can shoot to your maximum capability.
Okay, that you can conceal.
That you can conceal. So if you have an IPSC race gun that you shoot to a certain standard, get as close as you can to that with a concealed carry weapon that you can actually conceal.
Okay. Well, it seems simple enough. I'm sure that we'll upset millions of people when we post this, well, but it makes sense to me.
Subtlety is lost on the internet, John.
Oh, is that what it is? I guess.
Yeah, subtlety is dead.
Darn. I didn't kill it, but anyway.
Right.
So we've kind of gone over guns. Now, let's touch on this real quick. Just as far as weapon-mounted light on a pistol goes for concealed carrier, I've been of the opinion that really, for a civilian, you probably don't need that. I like to have it because I like to have it if I can carry it and it doesn't affect whether or not I carry. You know, I'd rather have it. I also shoot the gun a little bit better with one mounted. But
I think you've hit the nail on the head, John.
No, I wanted to give you room to talk.
Well, having a pistol-mounted flashlight is always a good thing if you can conceal it effectively. I find that I cannot and live with it comfortably. I can if I use a belt-mounted holster, but a belt-mounted holster for my body shape just doesn't work. I have to carry inside the waistband. But while there are lots of good inside the waistband holsters that work with a light, none of them I find can I carry effectively 100% of the time. And that's my standard, is that I carry my gun all the time unless I'm on an airplane.
Right.
So.
Right. Well, I mean, and that's, I actually got made fun of for carrying at the gym. And the gym is one of the few places where I switch what gun I carry, just because I haven't found out how to carry a full-size service pistol with a light and gym shorts. Now, if I do, I'll make a lot of money, but I haven't yet.
Right.
So.
Right.
Going back to the light, though, having a light on the gun, you still need to have a handheld light, correct?
Oh, absolutely, and that goes into the everyday carry piece. All of the other things that you carry to support your daily mission: handheld light, a knife, a pen, your cell phone, your keys, etc.
Okay, why? I mean, let's talk about that real quick. If you've got a light on the gun, why do you need a handheld light?
Well, because you don't want to point your gun at everything that needs light.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be able to look at something without pointing my gun at it.
You mean if I drop my keys, like at the grocery store, and it like rolls under the
right
the thing, I don't want to pull my gun out and start crawling right around on the floor, flashlight and stuff.
I know it sounds crazy, but you know that you're safe, but no one else does.
I would actually question myself if I pulled my gun out at the grocery store to use a flashlight. But yes, mm-hmm. Assuming that I'm smart enough to not do that, I would assume I was safe. But,
right. Well, and that's a common sense issue.
Well, once again,
I think that
died right there with subtlety at some point or another.
Yes, it did. That's the reason that some agencies to this day, you still can't carry a pistol mounted light, because they allowed it for a short time, and before you know it, you had patrol officers doing field sobriety tests with their pistol light.
I heard an amazing story about one directing traffic, which is just amazing. And we'll talk about police later in the show, but boy, will we ever. What are some other things that maybe people should, you know, think about not carrying because it's probably not necessary, or should think about carrying that they don't now? I mean, or does it depend too much to give solid answers?
Well, that's a pretty broad question. I find that most people carry either too much or not enough spare ammunition. Again, looking realistically at your mission, is it possible that you're going to encounter the Iranian Revolutionary Guard who's parachuted into the mall and you're going to need 600 rounds of ammo? Yes, it's theoretically possible, but it's not probable.
Right.
Your most likely gunfight as a CCW holder is going to be 3 to 6 rounds. I carry a reload not because I think I'm going to need the extra ammunition, but in case I have a malfunction.
Right.
That's why I carry a spare magazine.
Well, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, and knives are the other thing that, I mean, you know, knock yourself out, but carrying 2 or 3 knives, you're just making your life more difficult. And if you want to, go for it, knock yourself out. But don't try to convince me as your instructor that you carry this knife for, you know, stabbing snitches, and you carry this knife for hacking down trees.
Right, right. Do you think that, and we got about 40 seconds left or so, you know,
you're gonna give me a complex question.
Yeah, I'm gonna give you a hard. Actually, probably what we'll end up doing is go back and forth a little bit until we run right up on the break, and then I've successfully wasted time long enough to, you know, hit my mark. Sort of close.
You are a broadcasting professional.
I don't know about that. My producer's just kind of making a face at me right now, trying not to laugh.
Right.
Luckily, there's soundproof glass, so it's not distracting me too badly. But wait, I got like what, 5 more seconds left, Joe, until I hit that. About 10. So I need to draw this out another 8 seconds. 7, 6, 5. So we're talking with John Chapman about everyday carry gear and what you should or should not be doing. Right now you're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio. This thing brought to you by TopGunSupply.com. TopGunSupply.com is your web source for fine firearms, parts, and accessories. True Product Specialists, committed to delivering the highest level of customer support to you. They carry top name brands, including Ed Brown, Wilson Combat, Les Bears, Sig Sauer, and many more, as well as premium AR pattern rifles. Whether you are looking to protect yourself, are a first-time gun buyer, or a competitive shooter, TopGunSupply.com can satisfy your firearms needs. TopGunSupply.com, your premier source for SIG parts and accessories. So, we're talking with John Chapman, and I'm wasting your all's time, at least I did at the end of the last segment. only a little bit. So, you smiled too, though, right, Minion?
They didn't need that time anyways.
No. We weren't going to say anything crucial. John, are you still there?
I am.
See, I'm wasting your time too, and I apologize for that. So
that's perfectly all right. My time is your time.
Aw, thanks, buddy. So as far as ammunition goes, and you know, I'm a big fan of Tom Givens. I've taken his both of his instructor courses now. I've spent a lot of time looking at the shootings that his students have gotten into, and as far as I know, he's got the highest number of, you know, just plain civilians that have been involved in shootings.
By far,
yeah,
that I know of.
Yeah, that I'm aware of, too. I mean, I know there's instructors that have had, you know, cops or someone else getting way more shootings, but that's a different category.
Right.
You know, I think that the most number of rounds that one of his guys has had to fire is 11, I think.
Mm-hmm.
If it might have been one more than that, but either way, so, I mean, other than malfunction clearance, you could make the argument that you don't need a reload at all. But then the other side of that, and we were sort of talking about this the other day, I don't ever want to be the reason that someone uses to create a new TTP. You know?
Right.
Because whenever that happens, that's not good for you.
Right.
At least not that I've noticed.
Yes.
So, I mean, if you...
We have a saying in law enforcement that you don't want your name on case law.
Yeah, never. Never, ever, ever. So, I mean, if you can carry one or two reloads and it doesn't affect your day-to-day and it doesn't keep you from carrying and you can conceal it, I mean...
Yeah, knock yourself out.
Okay. So just
there's no downside.
If you're carrying like five or six, so maybe rethink things?
Right.
All
right. Right. I had a student who carried a 9mm 1911 who shot it all right. But he carried four spare magazines.
Yeah.
And so I had to have the, why don't you just carry a gun that holds more bullets speech.
Well, now as someone that likes 9mm 1911s.
As do I.
Yeah. Though I will say, here's my thing with single stack magazines. The only reason I tend to carry two or three reloads. Mm-hmm. I can make it through 10 rounds really fast. These days, and still feel pretty comfortable that I'm hitting what I'm shooting at. But I mean, is that once again just an honest assessment of your skill levels and capabilities before you start making decisions?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, and your likely needs. I mean,
right.
if I live in Memphis, Tennessee, and I spend a lot of time out repairing ATM machines. I'm probably going to carry four or five magazines.
You're going to roll heavy?
If I live in Twin Falls, Idaho, like I do, and I'm going to the mall where there's armed security and there's police officers around, and I'm probably going to carry one spare magazine.
Because once again, it's likely engagement scenarios and,
right.
and yada yada.
Yeah. There is my bottom line point to all that is there is thought required.
Mm-hmm.
You can't just do what everybody else is doing.
Well, and that's actually funny you bring that up, just because, you know, I've gotten to, for some reason or another, sort of step into the public eye with the whole tactical whatever you want to call it. And I occasionally get people that start asking me questions about what I do, but they don't ask me why I do it. And I know that they're... I mean, I don't know why they're mimicking me, because there's better people to mimic, but I know that they're doing that, and it's always curious to me that they don't ask for my reasoning.
Right.
So,
yeah. What without why is useless in the business of gunfighting?
Well, and that'll probably be the quote for the episode. That right there.
There you go.
Is classic. So, I guess, so we've covered... enough gun, not enough gun. We've covered lights. We've covered ammunition. What's something that people should maybe include that they're not?
I think what a lot of people think about, but they don't actually execute, is including some sort of fist fighting training in their CCW routine. If you haven't taken a Craig Douglas or South Mark class and you carry a gun every day, you're just wrong. I think most pistol fights that are conducted by CCW holders start and end as a fist fight.
Mm-hmm.
And not knowing how to defend yourself with your hands in conjunction with or integrating a pistol into that type of scenario, you're just asking to have to improvise in the middle of the worst day of your life. And that's not a good place to be.
Yeah, not good to try and learn new skills on the job, so to speak.
Yeah, while your head's getting pounded into the concrete, Prince.
Right. Well, and I'll point something out for the listeners. Now, if you go back and listen through a lot of the episodes, you'll notice all these very knowledgeable people come on that make their living as instructors that will then go and suggest someone trains with another instructor. And a lot of times it's Craig Douglas. So I just point that out. Free plug for Craig, who
deserves it.
Yeah, definitely. He is certainly the entangled gunfight guy. But
yeah.
Or mugging gone wrong, if you really want to call it what it is. So,
mm-hmm. Yep.
What do you think about medical supplies or tourniquets or things like that?
I think those are good supplies for your car,
mm-hmm.
Or your backpack, or you know, if you carry a briefcase or a backpack every day, absolutely have a compact medical kit with a tourniquet and a pressure bandage and a chest needle in there. I think domestically, unless you live in an extremely rural area, if you get in a shooting in the gas station parking lot, there's going to be all kinds of help there within 5 minutes.
Yeah.
So just having the basics to shut off an arterial bleed is probably good enough.
Yeah. So like you said, tourniquet, pressure bandage?
Yeah, tourniquet, pressure bandage, maybe a chest needle. I carry a bigger kit in my truck.
Mm-hmm.
Because I drive a lot, and I come across a lot of accidents and things like that.
Yeah, yeah. I've seen 2 rollover accidents in the last 4 months. So,
wow.
Watched them happen. So,
yeah. But last year I watched an RV cross the median on I-80 and get T-boned by a semi truck.
Nice.
That was a spectacular crash.
Yeah, I would imagine so. So once again, that just goes back to what you can comfortably carry and conceal and have on you every day.
Yes.
All right. I mean, I personally, and once again, you know, the why I do it, I've got a medical kit that I carry in my back pocket that's about the size of a wallet, you know, has a pressure bandage in it, has a tourniquet in it.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
But doesn't take up much room.
Yeah, there's no downside for your personal situation of that.
Yeah, exactly. And that, once again, that goes back into it. And I think a lot of people lose sight of, you know, how much someone's personal situation plays into this, because I know,
mm-hmm.
you know, Claude Werner catches a lot of grief for being a fan of pocket guns and things. But if you look at who his clientele is and also, too, where he spent a lot of time, when you're wearing a business mm-hmm. suit in a business environment that you're probably not supposed to have a gun in the first place, they start making a lot more sense.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
and as long as you can shoot it effectively.
Well, and he certainly can.
Perfectly good. Oh, yeah. Yes.
exactly. Yeah, that'd be the worst 4 seconds of...
issue.
Yeah, that'd be the worst 4 seconds of a bad guy's life.
Exactly.
And for those that don't know Claude, he looks like a kind of a grumpy older man, mm-hmm. you know, and certified... Yep.
But he's taken the time to learn to shoot that system properly.
Well, yeah, and he's done all the cool guy stuff too, but
right,
you know,
yeah. So I think the issue I have with pocket guns isn't the guns; it's the people who buy them, put one magazine or one cylinder of ammunition through them to make sure that they run, and then stick them in their pocket.
Yeah,
and call themselves armed.
Yeah,
all they've done is given me a pickup gun when they get killed.
Nice. Which is why I practice with my Glock 42 at 50 yards, but I'm kind of weird. So,
you are
exceedingly so. We got to go to break. When we get back, we're going to talk about some recent events in law enforcement that I think that I'd like to get your take on. Right now, we're talking with John Chapman. You're listening to Ballistic Radio.
Welcome back to Ballistic Radio. This segment brought to you by TaxStrike Steel Target Systems, makers of the quarter scale steel target and the arch frame target stand, which are literally the best steel targets and target stands I've ever used. Hit their targets with more than 30,000 rounds of rifle and pistol ammunition without a single problem. I keep trying to break them, I can't do it. For more information, visit them at TaxStrike.com, TaxStrike.com. So, we're listening.
Well, I'm kind of listening. I'm like half listening. We're talking. I'm definitely talking at John Chapman. So there's that going on. We've been
speaking in my direction.
Something like that. Isn't that what most people do?
Yes.
Well,
most people don't listen. They just talk.
What'd you say? Oh, wait.
Exactly.
Oh, I almost got you to fall for it, too.
Yes, you did.
Well, it's early.
When a giraffe drinks coffee, by the time it gets to the bottom of its throat, it's cold.
Yeah, exactly.
Have you ever thought about that?
Of
course you haven't, because all you think about is you.
Oh, man. I love that you know me so well, John. So there's been a couple of recent events in law enforcement that that I think that we should probably talk about, because I get accused of being blindly pro-police when events like these happen, which I don't think is the case at all. But one of them, we've got in South Carolina, an officer shoots a suspect in the back a number of times after a fight has ended or the suspect has disengaged. We've got a reserve officer, a 73-year-old reserve officer out in Oklahoma, I want to say, that shoots a suspect who is on the ground complying with commands, or kind of complying with commands, was trying to taser him, got confused. And then if we have time, we got a cop that does one of the most amazing things that I've seen recently as far as good decision-making under pressure. But where do you want to start?
I'd like to start in South Carolina.
Go ahead. So, but do you want to break it down real quick, your understanding of what occurred?
An officer conducts a traffic stop for a taillight violation in a parking lot of a convenience store, I think, or a gas station. At some point during the contact, it goes south. He makes an initial contact, goes back to his car to run the guy for warrants. As he's back in his car, the suspect exits his vehicle and takes off on foot running, and a foot pursuit ensues.
Right.
At some point, the officer catches the suspect, and a struggle of some sort ensues, and the officer pulls his taser in order to subdue the suspect. It's unclear exactly what happened, but there's indications that perhaps the suspect got the taser away from the officer and used it.
Yep.
And then the suspect disengages and begins running away again, and the officer draws his pistol and fires a number of times and kills the suspect.
Okay.
That's kind of the 50-cent tour of that incident.
Right. So I'll share my thoughts on this, and I'd like to get your take, too. I honestly hope that police officer spends a number of years in jail. You know, as many as they can get him for, realistically. Now, I know that the argument, well, he's got taser probes sticking out of him, the suspect tried to taser him. My understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, if he had shot him while he was getting tasered, it would have been justified. Once that's not effective and the suspect stops trying to do it, it's no longer justified?
Correct. Being authorized or justified to use lethal force is like being pregnant. You either are or you are not.
Okay.
There are very few. There's a start and a stop point that are usually clearly delineated.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the courts have understood for about 50 years now the decision cycle, the OODA loop that people talk about, that it takes time for an officer or an armed citizen to catch up with events as they're happening. So, for instance, a simple scenario that would match that circumstance is an officer is fighting with someone. That person pulls a knife and starts to stab them.
Mm-hmm.
The officer pulls his gun and begins to shoot. And as he's shooting, the suspect turns around and runs away, and a couple of rounds strike them in the back.
Yeah.
And then he stops shooting. The courts clearly understand that it takes time for those decisions or for the actions of your opponent to penetrate your conscious brain,
right,
and make you stop applying force. South Carolina was not that case.
Yeah.
If it was, the officer had a particularly long lag time in his understanding of the change in the situation.
So either way, it was wrong, probably. Unless some new evidence comes to light.
Unless he whispered in the officer's ear, you know, your name is John Smith and you live at 123 Main Street and your kids go to Elm Elementary School and I'm going to go kill them right now.
Yeah.
Short of that, there's
not much justification.
There's most likely not much justification there.
Right.
Now, when they were still at contact distance, assuming that the suspect had the taser in his hand, he would have been completely justified in shooting him to the ground.
However,
soon as he started to run away, the taser becomes ineffective. The threat has ended. It's now a foot pursuit again.
Okay, and that seems to be the part that people are missing out. It's not once you meet the requirements for deadly force, you're weapons free the rest of that encounter. It starts and stops multiple times sometimes.
Correct.
Okay.
Absolutely. And so, that's why training is so vital.
Right.
Putting yourself in those situations in a controlled environment so you can see how rapidly violence comes on and how rapidly it recedes.
Okay. Let's talk about Oklahoma real quick because we're starting to run towards the end of the show.
Sure.
Just pretty much undercover thing. They get a guy, foot pursuit. They chase him down. They've got him on the ground. The reserve officer has a pepper ball gun in his left hand. Thought he had a taser in his right hand. Goes to tase the suspect. It's actually his gun. He shoots him. He dies later in the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
So
we've seen this several times.
Yeah, it's not the
same type of incident.
It's not the first time that's happened. So is that once again training, or is that equipment placement, or
it's a little bit of both. It's training, but not in the sense that most people think it is. It's mostly training to use your cerebral cortex under stress,
mm-hmm,
to be able to make good decisions. And the only way to do that is to put yourself in those types of situations in a controlled environment and learn how to make good decisions quickly with that kind of craziness going on.
So chaos management.
Yes, it's thinking under chaos. And there are a lot of people, well, a lot. As a percentage of the population, it's pretty small. But there are people who are born with that ability. And most of those people work in the Joint Special Operations Command of the U.S. military.
Right.
Everybody else, all of us mere earth people, have to learn it.
Mm-hmm.
And it can be learned, but it takes conscious effort to learn how to make those kinds of decisions in those kinds of situations.
Right. And once again, we got about a minute and a half left, so the officer was probably a little too old to be doing what he was doing.
Not necessarily. The issue for me is one of training,
mm-hmm,
not one of age or reserve status. Full-time Sacramento Police Department, a full-time police officer did exactly the same thing.
Right.
On BART, which is the Bay Area Rapid Transit system in California, an officer did exactly the same thing, drew his pistol when he thought he was drawing, and he truly believed he was drawing his taser.
Yeah.
And put a round through the suspect's back.
Killed him.
Killed him.
Those were younger guys.
Issue.
Right.
Right.
So we got about a minute left. We've got another, mm-hmm, incident where we've got a bad guy firing a gun into the air. We have one officer radioing it in, and then from the outside, mm-hmm, of the video, you see another officer pretty much run this guy down with his cruiser. Quick thoughts?
Yep. Good for him.
Yeah.
Lethal force is lethal force. If, mm-hmm, I kill the guy with a broom handle, a gun, a rifle, my car, barbecue grill, it doesn't matter.
Right.
That person was a imminent threat
to a lot of
that
people.
Entire everybody on that street.
Yep.
And the quickest way to put him down was to run his ass over, and I'm glad they did it.
Yeah, that's awesome. So we're probably at the end of the show, unfortunately. John, I appreciate you taking the time with us. If people want to find out more about you, train with you, how can they do that?
Sure, they can check me out on Facebook or hit us up at lmsdefense.com or eagtactical.com.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. You be safe, all right?
Thanks, John.
Hey, no problem. So make sure you guys check out our website, ballisticradio.com, for past episodes, like our Facebook page at facebook.com/ballisticradio. Thanks for listening, everyone. As always, be safe and see you next week.